At Baptist Health, it's our mission to care for you when you're injured or sick and help you stay healthy and fit. Welcome to the Baptist Health Talk Podcast, where our respected experts bring you timely, practical health and wellness information to improve your family's quality of life.
Cervical cancer remains one of today's most common cancers in women, with more than 14,000 women in the United States being diagnosed every year. But there is some good news in this arena. Hi, everyone. I'm Joanna Gomez, your host for today's Baptist Health Talk, coming to you from the Baptist Health Newsroom. Thanks to advancements in screening and diagnosis, cervical cancer is not only preventable, but also one of the most successful treatable forms of cancer. And because of this, even the National Health Service in England is saying it is a realistic ambition to have cervical cancer eliminated in the country by 2040. Joining us today to talk to us about what women need to know is Dr. John Diaz, Chief of Gynecological Oncology for Baptist Health Miami Cancer Institute. Thank you so much for being here, Dr. Diaz. There's so many questions that I have for you today, but before we dive into today's subject, I just want to remind those tuning in across our different platforms, go ahead, send us your questions in the comments. We are here for you. We are happy to answer any questions you may have. So, okay, Dr. Diaz, let's get to it. I think my first question that I have for you is, what is the age to go see your gynecologist? As young women, we hear you should start going when you're sexually active, or sometimes you should go before. What is the right answer?
Yeah. So it depends. As far as cervical cancer screening, we used to recommend that once women became sexually active, they should start getting their pap smears. Now that changed a few years ago, and now the guidelines are starting at the age of 21, you should start getting your pap smears, regardless of onset of sexual activity. But you know, as women change from their pediatricians to their gynecologists,
yeah,
they start menstruating, become sexually active, different conversations, birth control pills. You know, some of those things may be better had with a gynecologist as opposed to their pediatrician. And there are gynecologists who specialize in adolescent medicine as well.
Okay, so pretty much if you have any questions, concerns, you should go and ask, and don't be afraid to go. I think there's been a taboo, especially about what age you should go and you should start. And cervical cancer, obviously, is one of the big reasons why we also go, and it really can affect women of all ages. What is it about it? What are we prone to, and why do they develop so much in young women?
Yeah. So cervical cancer is usually associated with an infection called the human papillomavirus infection. And this is transmitted through touch, particularly sexual contact. And over 85% of adults in the United States at some point in their lifetime have been exposed to HPV. Mm-hmm. Cervical cancer, thankfully, though, is really uncommon in the United States. As you said earlier, only 14,000 cases a year. And the majority of those women are either from outside the U.S. who have not had cervical cancer screening, or within the U.S. and don't have access to healthcare, or have not been able to keep up with their cervical cancer screening. So this really is a preventable cancer.
Okay, a lot of people are scared to go to doctors. I think that's safe to say. But what are some of the early signs of cervical cancers that we should be looking out for? Common symptoms.
Yeah. So the most important thing is to get there before you develop any of these symptoms, right? So again, cervical cancer is totally preventable through pap smears, HPV vaccine, which we'll talk about later. But once you develop symptoms, symptoms such as abnormal bleeding, pelvic pain, vaginal discharge, you know, that can be a sign of a more advanced disease. I mean, that's what we want to avoid with early screening and early detection.
Okay, so we know lifestyle has a lot to do with it. Healthcare choices, knowing your risk factors, but what are some of those risk factors that we should be aware of, and how can we lower those risks?
Yeah, so there are a lot of modifiable things we can do to help prevent cervical cancer. Again, I keep going back to screening because it's so important.
So important, right?
But as far as risk factors go, we know that cervical cancer is associated with HPV vaccine. And as we said earlier, that's through contact, particularly sexual contact. So as you have exposure to more sexual partners, that may increase your risk.
Okay.
Also, the sexual history of your partner may increase your risk.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Other factors are tobacco use that increase your risk of cervical cancer. And then there's a specific type of cervical cancer that may be associated with oral contraceptive use. So again, it's a conversation to have with your gynecologist or your primary care doctor about the benefits of OCPs as well as some of the risks.
Okay, so we know now age of 21, if you're sexually active, screenings are extremely important, but the HPV vaccine. As parents, we hear about it so much. I have a teenager and that conversation has already started. It doesn't matter if you have a boy or a girl. Why is it so important to get this vaccine? And let me just be very honest with you, Dr. Diaz, we never even got this vaccine at our age.
Yeah. So the vaccine has been an incredible advancement in medicine. Yeah. So we now have the ability to prevent development of any of these HPV-related cancers. So we're talking today about cervical cancer, and there are 14,000 new cases a year, but there are other HPV-related cancers that can affect women, like vulvar cancer, vaginal cancer. There are HPV-related cancers that affect men, head and neck cancers. And for those, we don't have any kind of screening. So the HPV vaccine gives us an opportunity to develop antibodies before the onset of sexual activity. So it's recommended for boys and girls about 9 to 10 years of age. And the idea is to get your body immune to this HPV so that when you do get exposed to it, your body's already ready to eliminate or suppress this virus so you don't go on to develop any of these cancers. And that's the important part. Try and get this immunization before the onset.
Okay, so it's extremely important, you say, to not only get these screenings, we've said it so many times, but also important to not be scared of this HPV vaccine. I can tell you as a mom, I'm scared. Yeah. You're scared to what to do, what is the right thing to do, because it's something foreign that we did as well. There's so many different things. Let's debunk some of these myths. Okay, if you have the HPV vaccine, will you probably get cervical cancer? Is one of those?
So the exact opposite, right? The HPV vaccine helps protect against cervical cancer. And you're right, when we were younger, this wasn't offered. In fact, the initial indications were up to the age of 26.
Right.
That's been extended now to 45. And so many of my patients, like us, who didn't have the opportunity to get the HPV vaccine, can now get it as adults. And even if you've already been exposed to HPV at one point, this vaccine may prevent other HPV-associated illnesses. So even if you never got it, even if you've already been exposed to one HPV, the vaccine is still of benefit. And this vaccine has been around now for decades. So we know the safety profile, and it's been demonstrated very effective to prevent the development of cervical cancer in women, but also head and neck cancers for men, which as I said earlier, there's no screening for those.
Right, that's exactly what you had said earlier. There's absolutely no way to detect that. So I have a teenager and I've already missed the deadline as to when to give him or her the vaccine. I can still do it when they're older, as they're older.
Absolutely, up until the age of 45, it's now approved by the FDA. So you can get the vaccine.
And does it change the dosage of how many you get?
So it does. If you get it earlier on, you only need 2 doses. If you get it later on, you need 3 doses. But the important part is to complete this dosing regimen and again give you the best chance to prevent not only HPV related cancers but also prevents against general warts. And so it's really important that we have these discussions, which can be a little bit uncomfortable if you're a teenager, but so important for the health going forward.
Yeah, it's very uncomfortable to have that conversation with your teenager. I will agree with you on that. Is there something though that you can do to prevent cervical cancer without getting this vaccine or even getting a pap smear regularly?
So the most important thing is to get your pap smear regularly, okay?
Yeah. And so, as uncomfortable as it is,
but it's so important, right? And so nowadays, when women go and see their gynecologist, we're doing a pap smear, which is where you do a scraping of the cervix to look for abnormal cells, but we're also looking for HPV. And the combination of this even increases the detection rate much earlier, so it's so important. And the frequency they need to see your gynecologist depends on your age and other risk factors. So it used to be annual, women would go to their gynecologist and get their pap smears, and that's no longer the recommendation. But as I stress to my patients, it doesn't mean you have to not see your gynecologist every year. It's still important every year to see your gynecologist. And again, depending on your age and your risk factors will depend how frequently your pap smears need to be done.
And it doesn't mean that every year when you go check in with your gynecologist, you're actually going to have a pap smear.
It's not going
to happen. So it could just be a nice conversation to make sure that everything is fine. There is another myth that is going around that says if you are promiscuous, then women will get HPV.
So HPV is transmitted sexually, okay? And yes, the number of partners increase your potential risk of developing HPV. But just because you got exposed to HPV doesn't mean you're gonna develop cervical cancer.
Okay.
And in fact, HPV is so prominent in the younger population that we don't even screen women for HPV in that early age group because that's when they're going to college, they're having more partners, and it's very likely they're gonna be exposed to HPV, and most of the infections are transient. In other words, they're gonna go away on their own, your immune system's gonna fight it, and it's not gonna have any long-term sequela. What we worry about are those HPV infections which women aren't able to clear. And so the thought is from the time of HPV exposure to developing a cervical cancer is about 10 years. So that's why we have that window where if you're getting your pap smears routinely, we're going to capture this before it becomes a cervical cancer. So yes, the increasing number of cervical partners may increase your risk of developing HPV, but just because you're exposed to HPV doesn't mean you're going to develop cervical cancer.
Okay. Where has been the big change? I feel like there's been this gap of like, it was from one time, one day to the next. Maybe it was something that science has been advanced so much, but like I keep saying, like this was non-existent at one point, or we weren't having these conversations.
Yeah, I think we weren't having these conversations, and unfortunately, I think we're still not having these conversations.
Oh.
If you looked at other parts of the world, such as Australia, they've done a great job with their vaccination programs, and they've seen the results with a decreased number of cervical cancer and these precancerous lesions that they're seeing in Australia. In the U.S., we haven't done as good a job, and in fact, those areas that need it the most, those underserved areas, those women who don't have the ability to routine screen and GYN care, are the ones that need these vaccinations the most, and they have the lowest rate of vaccination amongst those populations. So we need to do a better job with programs like this and getting this information out there so people understand the benefits of the HPV vaccine, that it's safe and it helps prevent a cancer that no one should be dying of today in 2023.
I agree with you. How about women who are getting into perimenopause, menopause stage? Does this all change?
So not really. And in fact, cervical cancer is bimodal. What that I mean is we have a bump in diagnosing women in their early stages or early years, I should say. So these women who were exposed to HPV, you know, early on, and then 10 years later, and you know, their 30s, we're starting to see these cervical cancer cases. Then we kind of have a drop off, right? So now you've probably cleared this infection, you're in a monogamous relationship,
right.
And then we see an uptick again in women in their 60s and 70s.
Mm.
Not necessarily because they're being promiscuous,
no.
But what happens is they lose their husband, they become a widow, and they think, I'm not sexually active, I don't see the gynecologist. And unfortunately, that's not the case. And so then they develop some of the symptoms we talked about earlier. And by the time they now go and they haven't seen a gynecologist for several years, they get diagnosed with a cervical cancer. So it affects the young and the old.
Okay, Dr. Diaz, we have a lot of questions coming in. So now let's go ahead and answer some of more of the top research questions that we see on the internet and some of you have been asking at home. So can a non-sexual active person get cervical cancer?
So you can. Again, most cervical cancers are related to the HPV, but some are not. And so some are not related to HPV exposure.
Okay, this is a great question. How often should I get a cervical cancer screening?
So again, depends on your age. And so that's why it's so important every year to see a gynecologist. You may not necessarily get a pap smear that year, but you'll have a discussion about where are you in your cervical cancer screening protocol. And then you still need to do an external exam, an internal exam, because we're not just looking for cervical cancer when you see the GYN. There are other things that we're screening for and looking for. So every year you should see the GYN. And again, depending on your age and your previous HPV history, will depend how frequently you need to have a pap smear done.
So pretty much talk to your doctor about it.
Exactly.
Okay, what is the cervical cancer survival rate? I think a lot of people are really curious about that.
Yeah. So if we catch it at an early stage, which we should if you're having routine screening, the cervical cancer survival rate is in 96%+. In other words, most women will survive this.
Okay, that's great news. That's amazing news,
I should
say.
It's great news, and again, that's why it's so important to undergo screening. But if we catch it a little bit later and it's metastasized to a lymph node, let's say, well, that survival rate drops down to 60%. And if we catch it once it's spread to other areas, it drops down to 19%. So again, it's potentially curable if we catch it early. And the best way to catch it early is with routine screening.
Yes, I think that is the big message of today. Okay, what are some of the signs that cervical cancer has spread?
So we talked about earlier, some of the signs that this may be a little bit more advanced could be abnormal bleeding, abnormal vaginal discharge, pelvic pain, abdominal pain. If you're experiencing any of these things, and you know your body best, you know, communicate this to your physician, either your primary care doctor or gynecologist, so they can make sure that something else is not going on.
Yeah, I will ask you one thing, because I think sometimes as we get older, right, women, our periods do change every month. So sometimes you can have something heavier. No need to be alarmed by what you just said. Just go see your doctor and see, because I think we hear something like that and automatically red flags start going.
Yeah. As women start getting closer to menopause, you'll have some changes in your menstrual cycle, but it's important to communicate this with your gynecologist. Now, once you've entered menopause, if you have any abnormal bleeding after that, definitely need to report that to your gynecologist, okay? Because that could be an early sign of a GYN cancer, either cervical cancer, endometrial cancer. It may not be any of those things.
Right.
But once you're menopausal, you really shouldn't be having abnormal bleeding. So that should definitely be reported right away.
Okay, and we have one final question here. How fast does cervical cancer progress?
Yeah. So we said earlier, from time to exposure to HPV to cervical cancer, we think it's about 10 years. Now, that's not everyone. And certainly I've seen some very young patients with cervical cancer. Mm-hmm. But that's why we have that ability to catch it with screening. So it takes about 10 years from exposure to developing a cancer. So important, again, that annual screening, those pap smears to catch these things before it gets there.
How about new treatments? I mean, we're coming into a new year. We're hoping that things are just going to get better. Are there any new treatments available?
Yeah. So cervical cancer is a cancer that we should eradicate in the United States.
Right. Well, we actually mentioned that at the top, right, when we said about England trying to eradicate. Yeah.
Between the combination of HPV vaccination and cervical cancer screening, we really should eradicate. Having said that, it's an exciting time for the treatment of cervical cancer. We have new drugs that have come on board now. One exciting drug is a drug that's called tisotinib vedotin, and it's a new class of drugs. They're called antibody drug conjugates.
Okay.
And it's a non-chemotherapy drug that has improved survival in women. And the other exciting part is immunotherapy. These are medications that use our own immune system to battle these cancers. And these have been approved in the treatment of cervical cancer and now brought up to the frontline treatment. So it's really an exciting time. For the first time in probably 20 years, we have new drugs to treat this disease. So while the treatment is getting better, the goal really should be to eliminate this cancer.
Right. Yeah. And screenings. Right. I think we've said it enough, and hopefully that is the message for today. Dr. Diaz, it really has been truly a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for being so informative and for sharing your insight with all of us. And thank you to our audience for being part of this. On behalf of all of us here at Baptist Health, stay safe, stay healthy, and thank you so much for watching.
Find additional valuable health and wellness information on our resource blog at baptisthealth.net/news. And be sure to interact with us on our social media channels for live and upcoming events. This podcast is brought to you by Baptist Health, the warmer side of care.